Today on Maine Calling, the mountains, rivers, islands, and towns whose names have Wabanaki roots, an encore presentation. Glance at a map of all the states and you'll see many Maine place names that exist nowhere else. Sure, there are other Portlands, Augustas, and Brunswicks around, but no other Kennebunks, Kennebecs, Caratunks, or Mahoosicks. That's because these names are of Wabanaki heritage. Sometimes greatly changed or mispronounced, they still have their roots in the people who have been on this land for thousands of years. Penobscot, Maliseet, Mi'kmaq, Passamaquoddy, and Abenaki. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we listen back to our earlier program about some of those names, how Indigenous people think about place names, and what some of them mean. This show is part of our series, Name Calling on Maine Calling. That's just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Many of the places, sites, and geographic features in our region have Wabanaki names. Katahdin, Ogunquit, Allegash, Aroostook, the list includes dozens. We often say them or hear them without knowing much about them. Today, we'll learn about the tribal history and traditions behind some of these names, and we'll hear some stories that are linked to them. This show is part of our series, Name Calling on Maine Calling, where we delve into where names come from. Joining me for this hour, James Francis, who is Director of Cultural and Historic Preservation and Tribal Historian for the Penobscot Nation. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about the Wabanaki traditions that appear in place names all around us? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. James Francis, thank you so much for joining us. Many people have requested that we do this program, so very excited to have you here. Let's start with the philosophy behind Wabanaki names. Throughout our country, there are towns that are named for people like Lincoln and Washington, or for other places like York or Belfast, but that's not how Indigenous people name places, is it?
Absolutely not. There's only one instance that I can think of here in Maine that would fall into that category, and that was named by, you know, a settlement here on the Penobscot River that was named after our chief, Orono. And so the town of Orono is named for a Penobscot chief. But when you look at the broader view of Indigenous place names, it really points to our culture as being very mobile and using the rivers, lakes, ponds, and streams as travel corridors. And so when you look at the canoe routes, they fall very well into how we name places. There's a lot of geologic and geographic description of places that come about through understanding place names, and sometimes they're resource based, you know, the Birch Stream or Hemlock Island, and even land use. There's places like a place where we speared sturgeon by torchlight. So there's a very important resource, and how to collect that resource is there. And so you really start to get into understanding how culturally we understood the landscape.
Yeah, and I was thinking that you probably can use these place names as a way to learn and reflect about what was important to your ancestors.
Yeah, I often call them a window into the past, because you really begin to understand how my ancestors saw the landscape and used the landscape and traveled the landscape. It unlocks a whole new layer of understanding of our indigenous homeland.
I understand that we do know, you do know the root and the story behind many names, but there are many that are unknown as well, correct?
Yes. So, you know, there wasn't a, you know, a paper map that happened. And so for the last, 25, 30 years, I've been, you know, culling the archives and finding different resources that get us close sometimes. And then with the work with the Penobscot Language Program, we've kind of really dialed down and figured out what these words mean. And today we have compiled a map that puts these places within, you know, the spatial region of Maine.
So tell me about that work that you do. What kind of documents are you finding? Tell us a story about maybe investigating one or two names that were maybe a little more of a treasure hunt than you expected.
So one great resource was Joseph Treat's journal. So in 1820, Governor King hires Joseph Treat to do a survey of the Penobscot River into the Allegash, into the St. John, and back the Aroostook, back into Penobscot waters. And he hires John Neptune, a leader in our community, to guide him on this journey. And within those, the survey, he drew these maps, and he indicated two things. He indicated place nomenclature, place names, but also put little triangles where they were indigenous encampments. And so it gives us this snapshot in the summer of 1820 where people were living on the Penobscot River, and also these place names. And just above the Penobscot community of Indian Island, there is a island that we call Orson Island. And the indigenous name for Orson Island was Kachi Mugawug Menahan. So Kachi is something really big, and Mugawug is a bog, so Big Bog Island. And that one, you know, for many years, it kind of confused me, because although there is a kind of a small bog on Orson Island, there's not a big bog. But from a river perspective, from a travel perspective, just on the north end of Orson Island is Birch Stream, which goes into the Elton Bog, one of the biggest bogs in the state of Maine. And so Big Bog Island isn't really talking about the island itself, but the bog that that island is at the gateway of.
Oh, I see. So, right.
Yeah. So you really have to think differently.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess a little bit relieved that that's the story you told, because when you said there's not a big bog there, I thought, oh, is that an indication of climate change, that maybe in 1820 there was and there isn't anymore? But no, you went in a different direction. That is interesting. You sort of have to think how people might have described a place in terms of navigation or a gateway, an entranceway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So go ahead.
One of the things we find when we do field work is that sometimes there's some sort of infrastructure, whether it's a whole town or a city or a dam, that has changed the character of the river, and those place names don't make sense anymore.
They don't match exactly anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you told us about this journal from 1820. What are some of your other best sources?
So Henry David Thoreau, he did a pretty solid job of, you know, taking language from his guides. You know, Joseph Atien and Joe Polis were his guides in 1853 and 1857, respectively. And he even says in his journals, Thoreau says that the way he understood the indigenous language, he saw it from a whole new place, that things he only had scientific ones before, he learned something new about those things in the language. So it's So you got that. And then one of the biggest resources that we find is from a brewer historian named Fanny Hardy Eckstorm. And Fanny was the daughter of Manly Hardy, who Manly was a fur trader, and he had hosted a lot of people in his living room at night around the fire. In particular, he was close friends with John Neptune, our lieutenant governor. And Fanny, growing up, heard these stories from old John Neptune and also compiled a lot of place names. And what's really great about her resources is she doesn't make any determination. She just kind of catalogs where all of these place names were documented through history. So you get several different kind of writings about one word, and then she does say something about it, but not definitively. So it helps to not have to do all that research because she put it in her book.
Wonderful. And what year was that from? Do you remember?
She published it in like 1943, I believe.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk about a couple big ones. Katahdin. What does the name mean? And what is the significance of that mountain to you and your people?
So there's a little bit of debate. Some people say it means, you know, biggest mountain. I think it means greatest mountain. And it's, you know, this idea that, you know, people often say when I say this means greatest mountain, they're like, oh, that makes sense. And I was like, why does that make sense? And they say, oh, well, because it's the biggest in Maine. And so what they've just done is put a geographical, like, invisible line around something. Just across the border in New Hampshire is Mount Washington, which is bigger. And so, and Katahdin was named way before, you know, the shape of the state of Maine was put on a map. So it's like mixing apples and oranges a little bit. And so the greatest mountain really, to me, points to our cultural connection to it. You know, Glooskap came here and he taught the people things, how to live here, how to interact with the animals. And then when he was done, he traveled north in his canoe and Katahdin becomes his lodge. And so to me, that has very culturally some significance over what we call that mountain. And, you know, besides, when I'm standing there looking at Katahdin, there's something. I think we've all felt it, that there is a pull, there is an energy, this that makes that one mountain feel great amongst all the others.
It's less about measuring the height in feet or meters and more about its greatness in terms of what it means to the people and the natural world around it.
So if you are walking one day and you're looking at Mount Washington, and then a couple of weeks later, you were walking by or canoeing by and seeing Katahdin, could you tell me which one was bigger?
No way.
No. You know, it's not until, you know, Jackson goes up there that we get a measurement of how tall Katahdin actually is. So I think it has a lot less to do with the height and more to do with something intangible, something culturally great about that that mountain.
And James, a lot of people know this, but we've been referring to it as Katahdin and not Mount Katahdin as it was for so many years. And the reason of that, because that is, it's just, you're repeating yourselves, right?
Yeah, it's like saying, you know, mountain, greatest mountain. So it's, there's a little redundancy to it. So yes.
All right, I want to ask you about a couple others before we take our break. Millinocket. Now, I had always thought that Millinocket, the name came later because there were two mills there and it didn't even exist before there were mills, but it has nothing to do with the fact that there are paper mills there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So Millinocket is actually named for the Lake of Millinocket. Oftentimes, although there's a Millinocket stream, the Millinocket just means lake of various shaped islands. And so if you've ever been to Millinocket Lake, the one just south of Katahdin. There's one in the Penobscot watershed near Katahdin, but there's also a Millinocket Lake in the Aroostook watershed, which is north of Grand Lake Matagammon and near Munsungan. So, but that both have various shaped islands.
Okay. So lake with various shaped islands. How about the kegs? Mattawamkeag and Passadumkeag, do they have something in common? Does keg mean something?
A keg is just a locative. So when you're saying keg, you're just saying at the.
Huh.
So in the case of Passadumkeag, you're saying at the place which is above the gravel bar. So within the Penobscot River, below Passadumkeag stream, there is it's very shallow, and there's a lot of gravel in the river. There's a big gravel bar there, and that the Passadumkeag stream is actually carrying gravel. It's moving it. The stream can move gravel better than a river. Smaller cross section, more force of the water can move that gravel, but when it hits the river, it kind of falls out in the form of a gravel bar, and that feature is very distinct in the river. And so that stream above that gravel bar gets that name above the gravel bar, that place above the gravel bar. Mattawamkeag is, the place at the land of elevated gravel. And so at the end of Mattawamkeag stream, it again gets very, very shallow. But Mattawamkeag is an extremely important stream as far as travel goes, because by going up Mattawamkeag stream, it connects to the St. Croix River, which then connects to, I believe it's the Eel River, which then connects to the St. John River. And so it's kind of the highway east. It's how we got further east out of our watershed.
Wow. Well, we're speaking with James Francis about Wabanaki place names. This is part of our series, Name Calling on Main Calling. What are your questions for him? You can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. When we come back, we're going to learn about the renaming of a set of falls in Yarmouth. We'll be right back, or naming it again. We'll be right back.
Hey, Yo-Yo, why did you go to Acadia?
I wanted to welcome the sun.
Good morning, everybody.
I'm Ana Gonzalez, and I've been traveling around the country with Yo-Yo Ma for the past few years, meeting new people and playing music.
Powwow music is so different from Western classical music.
But in Maine, Yo-Yo just joined in.
I'm a human being first, a musician second, and a cellist third.
Listen to Our Common Nature from WNYC, where we use music to connect to nature, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The topic of our show today, Wabanaki place names. My guest is James Francis, tribal historian as well as director of cultural and historic preservation for the Penobscot Nation. We invite you to join the conversation. What have you always wondered about place names that have Wabanaki roots? You can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram. Calling in now is Ron Nicholas Savisky, who lives in Yarmouth and is from the Maliseet tribe. He's with the Yarmouth Community Alliance for Racial Equity and helped coordinate the Indigenous Awareness Group. Thanks for calling in today, Ron.
You're welcome. Great show.
Tell us your story that you were involved in bringing back the use of a Wabanaki name for some falls on the Royal River. Tell me which falls we're talking about and what you found out.
We're talking about the very first falls that you would run into, so to speak, when coming up from the Royal River. Just under the bridge for I-295, if you look inland towards the town, that's where the first falls, as it was known for time eternal, since the town was formed, they called it the first falls. So it's the first falls you see when you look towards the town. And the name that it goes by, and we got help from the Indian place names by Fanny Hardy as well as help from the Penobscot Nation's map and gazetteer. This is how we name our land. So the term is Pumgustuk, which means Pumgustuk, right, which means falls goes out place. So it's a place where the water bubbles over the rocks, and we have a story to tell about the name becoming permanent.
Well, tell it.
We applied for a permanent naming with the Board of Geographic Names. The Domestic Names Committee approved an application we did for the permanent naming of it. So it's now an official name. So we're pretty excited about that.
And that's pretty recent, right? As of, was it November that it became official?
Right, right. Maybe just in time, early November.
What does this mean to you, Ron?
Well, being away from my tribal roots and being down here trying to help create awareness of Wabanaki presence and history, it really means a lot. I think of my grandparents who were not able to tell us much about their past, and I feel like I'm helping to make gains for the family, for the tribe, and for the local people. Years ago, I wondered how we could create more awareness in this town about Wabanaki presence, past and present. And the group formed, and I helped coordinate the founding of our Indigenous Awareness Group, and it was all uphill from there. And there's a lot of enthusiasm in town for some of the work we're doing, including signage projects and this place name that was approved.
So you found people very welcoming to the idea.
Yes. And another interesting tidbit is the term Pumgustuk happens to be the name of the first fire department that was formed in Yarmouth. So just having a connection from the colonial end or the colonial side was interesting and a little bit meaningful.
Before we let you go, James, is there anything you'd like to say to Ron?
Keep up the good work. You know, it's, for me as the, I'm going to use air quotes here, the official Penobscot historian, the person who gets a salary for doing this work, it doesn't mean that I'm the only one, that there are people within our community who do research into, look into our histories from different kind of pockets. And usually it's pockets that I stay out of. If, Stanley Neptune is looking at root clubs, then I will support him by sending him any information I find. But, culturally, we have these different little pockets of people who want to know knowledge. So it's very helpful. And I think it's great that, that we're looking to change, place names. And I have a blank form to the Bureau of Geographic Naming in my email right now that I have to fill out today for a couple of islands near Castine. So we have renamed them Indigenous names. I understand the process.
James, what are those names? What would those islands near Castine go from being referred to as what will their new and old official name be?
Well, they were Upper and Lower Negro Island. That got changed to Esther and Emmanuel. But then there was a push to have a Wabanaki name, a collective name. And we chose... I'm not going to be able to pronounce it, but it means they come together. And so at low tide, they sit in the Bagaduce River, which is a tidal river. It's almost like an estuary. And at low tide, these islands become one island. They're connected. They're linked. And so they kind of come together. And so this idea of coming together, both geographically, but also kind of socially and metaphorically. And so We chose that name for those reasons.
You know, I'm so glad you said you might not be able to pronounce it, because I have to say there are so many times I've hesitated before saying something because I'm afraid I'm going to pronounce it wrong. So I guess that's okay, right? If you're close.
Yeah, well, it is, you know, and oftentimes when we look at the words in our language, because our language used the international phonics system and not English, you know, T's written on the paper sound like D's, and P's written on the paper sound like B's. So it's sometimes it's hard to just rattle off these words, even if you see it written, because we have been, you know, all raised learning English, and certain characters have certain sounds. And so you kind of have to relearn those when you're looking at the written indigenous language, especially Ron, ours.
Ron, before we let you go, is there anywhere else that you're hoping to be a part of renaming?
We're actually renaming some of the local spots in town, which is part of a much larger project. We're working with land preserves, creating stories and language to go with the stories, signage, and we have a wonderful conglomeration of organizations throughout the town that are participating, and we have teams that are formed to work in specific areas, so we're pretty excited about that. And overall, it's terrific to see awareness growing in our territory, and it's encouraging to see Wabanaki and non-Wabanaki people working together for the future.
Well, thank you so much for calling, and that was Ron Nicholas Savisky with the Maliseet Tribe, who lives in Yarmouth. We have lots of questions coming in. Let's see here, James. The first one is from Robert. What does the suffix "scot" S-C-O-T mean in Abenaki? Specifically, is sheepscot Wabanaki or English?
Oh, it's definitely Wabanaki. We see it in Penobscot. I think it's just an anglicized version of either cook or keg. It's, again, locative type of thing that comes up. I wouldn't be able to say definitively what the Scot means. Like Penobscot means, you know, the place at where the river widens out, or the place of the white rocks. And it's a description of the falls in Old Town. And so it's there's now a dam on there, so we don't see the features that are there. But the whole river was then named for that, and the people were named for that place. And, you know, a whole county and a town. So it's interesting how a description of one set of falls can just blossom into so much.
Here's an email from Bruce. As land surveyors, we often see ancient names for regions in Maine. I have heard many different explanations for what the Cook part of water bodies is. Sebasticook, Anabesicook, Marinacook means. Is it a certain kind of fish, or does it mean water?
So, again, this is another arguable thing, but Cook is canoeable. And so, like, when we look at the Sawadabscook in Hamden, and then Sebasticook that goes into Waterville, and those two get really close to each other. And if you paddle from the Penobscot up the Sawadabscook, you take a small portage into Pleasant Lake, and then you're in the Sebasticook, and you can take that all the way down to Waterville. And what you've just done is leap from one watershed to another with like a 2-mile walk through the woods, opened up hundreds of miles of waterways. And the converse to Cook being canoeable, is Hunk, the ending Hunk. So the Cooks and the Hunks. And I always tell my wife there's a joke there. And she tells me, no, there's no joke there. Just keep going.
When you say the Hunk is the opposite, does it mean it's not traversable?
Yeah. So if you think of like Nisawadahunk, so Nisawadahunk is the name of a stream that is just kind of southwest of where Katahdin is, and it flows into the Penobscot River. And the Sawatahunk means a stream that flows between the mountains. And if you've ever hiked into Niagara, Little Niagara in Baxter State Park, you're on the Sawatahunk Stream. And it's a stream that is full of these drops over polished granite that people actually slide down. And so it's not a very canoeable type of situation. And so that hunk is kind of there. And sometimes we see it in certain coves on lakes that are really shallow and muddy.
Sort of a warning, it seems.
Don't
try this. Don't try this river.
Exactly. You know, there's a, when they were putting in the Super Walmart in Bangor, I got a lot of calls because the Walmart was going to be put in the Pemjajawook watershed, that like there was a wildlife refuge there. And they were calling my office to ask me what Pemjajawook means. And I said, well, Pemjajawook is actually named for the falls in Bangor. And what Pemjajawook kind of means is it comes into view, meaning that at high tide, there is no falls. But as the tide goes out and the water gets lower, then the falls appear. That's Pemjajawook. But what we find as you go up and down rivers, that Pemjajawook Stream is immediately just upriver from Pemjajawook, the falls. And so you would get that would retain the same name. And at the head of that stream is where the wetland is today. And we see that all up and down the river, Nisawatahunk. Just upstream from Nisawatahunk, which is named for the stream, is Nisawatahunk Falls on the Penobscot River. But it still means the stream that flows between the mountain falls. And so it isn't a new description of that falls. It's taken from previous. Pockwockamus, same thing. Pockwockamus Falls is named, it means shallow, muddy pond. And so that stream, Pockwockamus Stream, is just downriver from Pockwockamus Falls. And so you see this all over the place, that there is a different way of thinking about naming place.
An email there from Dan. Were the place names and language consistent among the four indigenous tribes in Maine? Interesting question.
So we all come from the same stock. It's the same Algonquian Abenaki language groups. And so they're very, very close. And sometimes we see like Maliseet words within the Penobscot river shed. They were very close because it's essentially the same languages. They all come from the larger Algic or Algonquian language family, which goes all the way to the Great Lakes and north into the Canadian Rockies, far south is the Delaware. And here in Maine and the Maritimes, we speak, and there's an umbrella under Algonquian as Abenaki languages.
Gotcha. Well, this is a related question then. This is from Jay. He says, there's a Kennebec County in Minnesota. Any connection? The Ojibwe language is somewhat related to Wabanaki. There is also an Orono, Minnesota.
The languages out Ojibwe and Menominee and Potawatomi and all of those names are the same as what we got here. Essentially, they're a little different. And the town of Orono in Minnesota is actually named for Orono, Maine. So. The people left Maine and went to Minnesota, and they said, oh, this looks like Orono, Maine. And so they renamed it. They named that place, that new town, Orono.
Oh, isn't that? That's really interesting. So they did the sort of Western thing of naming one place after another place, but it was after an indigenous chief, Chief Orono. So interesting. Well, we're talking with James Francis today on Maine Calling. This is part of our series, Name Calling on Maine Calling. What are your questions about Wabanaki place names? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we are talking about Wabanaki place names in Maine. There are dozens of them, and our guest today, James Francis, who is with the Penobscot Nation, and he has spent years doing research about these names and other aspects of language and heritage. Share your comments and questions. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We have all sorts of questions about roots and things like this. So this is from Noah. Could you please explain the significance of Beck endings in the Northeast? Moosebeck, Sebeck, Kennebec, Quebec, Lubeck. I grew up in Lubeck and have a debate with my father. He thinks it's named by the French, meaning the beak for the peninsula. I think it's the indigenous name place for where the river narrows.
So I haven't heard either one of those before for the word Beck at all. It's interesting that, you know, as the more I talk about this, the more that I learn myself. And so I'm writing this down because I've never even thought of the ending Beck as being possible in indigenous. There is one thing that I wanted to share is that, you know, as we look at a map of Maine, we can clearly see that the Passadumkeags, Mattawamkeags, Kandeskeags, and Penobscot and Kennebec are all indigenous place names. But there's also like indigenous place names that are here in spirit, which means like I think of Salmon Stream on the Penobscot River. That's always been called Salmon Stream. And Blue Hill. Blue Hill was always called Blue Hill. Just we called it Blue Hill in our language. And so there are many, many place names in Maine that carry the spirit of how we saw the landscape.
Oh, that would be interesting. Would Caribou be an example of that?
Possibly. You know, our word for caribou is, you know, the McGalloway River, which is in western Maine. It's headwaters of the Androscoggin. Is Mugalibu is caribou. And so McGalloway has been anglicized version of how we said caribou, which was Mugalibu, which is like a snow shoveler. It used to move the snow with their antlers and get at the vegetation under the snow.
We'll go to Mark calling from St. George. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, this is Mark. Just a quick question for you. I'm curious as to what the difference is between the terms Abenaki and Wabanaki. My understanding is that Wabanaki is a more contemporary term that applies to a larger grouping of tribal affiliation. So if you can elaborate on that, I'd appreciate it.
So Wabanaki is a collective term used to, you're talking about people of the dawn. So it's a kind of a collective term for a larger region. Abenaki is a word that's used in many contexts. I used it in the context of language today, but there's also indigenous people that are from Canada today called Abenaki in the communities of Wolanoc and Odinak. And and also if you think about the history of museums and archives, the people of Maine, the Passamaquoddies, the Maliseets, and the Passamaquoddies were all labeled as Eastern Abenaki. And so sometimes you see that within the record that you can go to a museum if you want to see the Penobscot stuff. I typically ask to see the Penobscot stuff and any Eastern Abenaki stuff because of how things were named in the past. And I think they're two separate words. And they're not related at all. because to hear people like Roger Paul, who's a Passamaquoddy Maliseet speaker, he says Wabanaki very differently than how we say it, anglicized. And it's very different from Abenaki.
Mark,
great
thanks
question,
for your,
though.
Yeah, great question. Thank you. Let's see. We'll go to Kevin calling from Auburn. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yeah. I wanted to ask Mr. Francis about the Androscoggin River. I always thought Androscoggin was a native word, but now somebody mentioned to me that it, that Andro is English. I don't know if that's right or not.
Do you know, James?
Yeah, that's my understanding. From what I understand, that what we call the Androscoggin River had to do with, they call them fall fishes. They make these little stone shelters. A fish stacks up stones after they lay eggs, and they make these little stone structures in the rivers. And that river was named for that, little stone houses. And they're referring to fall fish that do that.
Kevin, thanks for your question. Here's an email from Elaine. Is the meaning of mata or mata related to fishing times and places?
No. I can't remember what mata means. We see it all over the place. We see, you know, mata gammoned is kind of at the end of a series. And it probably means it has more to do with at the end of something, because mata wumkeg is at the gravelly end, raised gravelly end. Mata nahkuk, I'm not sure. Mata nahkuk is one that we haven't been definitively been able to crack. And that's like the Lincoln area. So I think it has something to do with something at the end. If you, like Matinicus, it was when we were doing some work out there on Matinicus, I went out to visit them to try to, talk to them about, them renaming their ferry. And, we were doing some research, and our language master, he was, a new language master, because, Carol used to be our language master. She just retired. He says, oh, there's something really special at the end of that island, because the word was pointing them to that. And then I realized, I says, could it be at the end of the islands? Meaning it's the last island, and Matinicus fits that description. He says, yes. And so, you know, how we get to these places is this kind of a little journey, but Matinicus is at the end of the islands. It's the last one, the furthest one out. And so I think that Mata at the beginning is related to that, as well as, like I said, Matagammon, Matamisconus, all of that.
It's sort of like a little puzzle, isn't it, James? Or a big puzzle.
It is. And the thing that's really important is field work. It's like we have to get out there and like try to understand what is actually going on in the landscape.